Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening. Tom Moran here from Tom's Big Spider. So first off, I hope everybody had a fantastic Christmas, Hanukkah, whatever you were celebrating, holiday. We had a good one over here, although I will say the vacation seemed to be much shorter than it has in the past. One good thing about being a teacher is you do get to look forward to those vacations that you used to look forward to as a kid. Like, you never get to grow up because you're always looking for Christmas vacation, then you have April break, and then you have, obviously, the big one, summer vacation. And Christmas vacation this year just seemed very, very short. I had this whole list of things I wanted to do and work on, and I just didn't get to most of it. But I did get to relax with the family. Billy always takes that week off, and the kids are off, so we had a good time over here just kind of hanging out and being lazy. So hope everybody else enjoyed theirs as well. So in today's episode, what we're going to be doing is taking a look at a couple comments I received lately. And again, as I've explained before, a lot of times the comments I get on my YouTube, I start to see a pattern. I start to see a certain issue pop up over and over and over again. And when it pops up enough, I kind of make a note of it. I start taking down notes for a podcast. And then we get to this point that we're here at today, last one of the year, where we're going to talk about some things people have asked me about and some things that I've noticed. So the first topic we're going to be talking about today, and this one has come up quite a bit lately, and I think it's because I use the word myself, and it tends to trip some people up. Now, there's been a lot of talk out there about, and it's still an evolving debate, I know where I fall in it, but about tarantula intelligence or spider intelligence in general. And I think a lot of us are still, we recognize certain things. When you keep enough of these animals for a long enough period of time, you start recognizing that some of the things you've read about them may not hold true, or you start seeing things that make you question what you read about them. So for example, we talk about personality. So a lot of times I will refer to my animals as having a certain type of personality. And I think most folks know where I'm coming from when I say that, but there are those folks out there that tend to get upset with it. So I mentioned it was one video, and I tried to find my notes. My desk is a mess here, but I had written this down as a potential topic because I had mentioned that one of my spiders had a personality. The person went, you're anthropomorphizing here. They don't have personalities. And I kind of came back with, well, hold on just a minute. You know, let's talk about spider behavior and some of the things we've seen. Now, I try to be very scientific with my thinking. Now, full disclosure, I'm the type of guy that talks to my dogs. If you've watched my videos, I talk to my spiders. I know they're not listening. I think there's a difference between somebody who's talking because it's a comfort thing. It's like you're trying to assuage the animal's fear or, you know, trepidation when you're trying to move it into a new enclosure. And it's more for you than anything. And I obviously recognize that. When I'm downstairs, I have my dog Caesar, who I make talk to me. It's more for fun to make the family laugh. But there are moments where I lose myself in it and think he's talking about it. No, I'm totally kidding. But you guys know, those of you that have pets, that love your pets, the problem is we are emotional creatures and we get emotionally attached to these animals. And I honestly think that in some ways it's human nature to try to apply some of that to the animals, to give them personalities, to think that they love you back when maybe they're just showing like, hey, this giant person drops food in all the time. I'm not going to try to kill them. Maybe they recognize some deep-rooted primitive brain of theirs that this person doesn't pose a threat to me, or they just get used to it, the conditioned response. And I'm not obviously an animal behavioralist. I want to make that very, very clear. I have spent the vast majority of my life around animals. I grew up on a farm where I'd be the one taming everything down, sometimes taming down squirrels and chipmunks and birds. And I was just a weird little kid who spent a lot of time around animals that could read them really well. I think that helped me a lot. And then growing up, moved from animals from goats and sheep and chickens and things of that nature to eventually got into snakes, got into tarantulas. So I've been around animals my entire life. And I think I have a knack for kind of reading behaviors, reading what's causing the behaviors. I've used that in my teaching. When you work with students, especially students with behavioral issues, it's a great knack to be able to go, all right, the reason why Johnny's freaking out isn't because he hates you as a teacher, it's because he's embarrassed because he can't read. So if he gets thrown out of the classroom, he doesn't have to read. And it reduces his stress, things of that nature. So not a trained behavioralist, I want to make that very, very clear, but I have seen some things where I recognize it. In the very least, there's been a conditioned response with my tarantulas. I think I mentioned a couple times over the years, my first Caribbean versicolor, I set it up in a way that she wasn't able to come down to the ground to eat. I would put roaches and stuff in the bottom of her enclosure. She'd never come down and eat. So what I would do is take the enclosure, I would lay it on its side, and she had her little web that she had webbed up in the corner, and I would take a roach and hold it by its leg right at the mouth of that web. And eventually she would feel the movement, she would come, she'd grab the roach, and she'd eat. Well, after doing this for several months, I started to realize that when I would turn the enclosure over, my little spider would automatically come to the entrance of that webbing. So before I'd turn the enclosure over, she'd hide up in a corner. Then she would start coming right to the entrance of the webbing and wait for me to bring the roach to her. So there was a behavior, like I saw it with my own eyes. After doing this for a certain number of times, something in that little primitive spider brain said, hey, you know what? Every time my enclosure gets jounced around like this, I get food. So maybe I should go to where the food comes from. So is it learned behavior? I don't know. Is it just something that triggers in the spider that it recognizes this is the spot to sit to get prey? I don't know. Again, I'm not a scientist. I'm not an expert, but it is something that I've seen with my own eyes that leads me to believe that maybe there's a little bit more going on in there than sometimes we give them credit for. So with all of that in mind, I last week received a comment on my OBT video by Connor King, who says, I also listen to your podcast and I was wondering your thoughts about tarantula behavior and their, quote, personalities. I know people tend to anthropomorphize them, but I've noticed that, and I'm sure that you have too, that each have their own quirks. I'm so curious and fascinated by these creatures. And I've received a few of these lately with folks asking, what are your thoughts on this? What do you see? And I think it's a tricky topic because on one side you have people that are like, they do not have personalities. They do not, we're applying human characteristics to them, and they're just, you know, for lack of a better term, dumb animals. They're very mechanical. And then on the other side, there's the folks that build them these gorgeous chateaus with, that give them, you know, things to do in their enclosures that treat them like they're more like reasoning, like you treat a dog or a cat. They hold them, they pet them, they say, look at my spider sitting here while I'm petting its back, it loves it. So there's two sides, very different sides of this. And then I think there's those of us who kind of land in the middle that recognize there are some points from both sides that are very valid. So to kick it off, let's talk. I have the definition from the American Psychological Association of personality, what personality means. And then we're going to do the really scientific Wikipedia definition of it. No, I just wanted general definitions. There are a bunch out there, but they're all very, very similar. So American Psychological Association says that personality refers to the enduring characteristics and behavior that comprise a person's unique adjustment to life, including major traits, interests, drives, values, self-concept, abilities, and emotional patterns. Various theories explain the structure and development of personalities in different ways, but all agree that personality helps determine behavior. So let's latch onto that for a moment. And then the amazing Wikipedia definition, personality is any person's collection of interrelated behavioral, cognitive, and emotional patterns that comprise a person's unique adjustment to life. These interrelated patterns are relatively stable, but can change over long periods of time. So I think let's talk about number one. I think one thing that throws people off is obviously the key word, the root of the term personality is person, which means human. So right away, we are assigning animals human characteristics. And I've had people say flat out, it's personality because we're talking about people. We're not talking about spiders. I get it. I do. I really get it. And I think the other thing that trips people up is the fact that they mention emotional patterns. And that's the part that I think some folks get lost in. Again, I referred to earlier how I talked to my dog. And the dogs, we've proven dogs have some emotions, but I talk to my spiders too. When I'm up here the other night, I was feeding one of my scorpions. I put a cricket in, the scorpion latched on, the cricket was stinging. And I'm like, easy there, buddy, getting food. I'm just talking because it's making me feel better. I know that scorpion's not going, oh, Tom, oh, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be too rough with the cricket or to grab your tongs or whatever. It has no idea what I'm saying, what's going on. It's not processing it. There's no emotion about it. So I think the first part that throws people off, especially when you look at the definition, is the word emotion or emotional patterns. Spiders are not emotional creatures. At least there's been no evidence of that so far. And I want to make that clear because somebody always comes up and tries to go, well, I was petting my spider the other day and it cozied up my hand. No, that was not emotion. Your spider wasn't like, oh God, here's Barbara. I love her so much. I want to crawl my hand and have her pet my back. No, your spider is not. My mind would be blown if anybody was ever able to prove that a spider was actually thinking that. I don't think those of us who spent a lot of time around them, even if we have seen some traits, some characteristics, we're not saying they're emotional animals. I don't think they grow attached to their keepers. I think if anything, if they're behaving a certain way, they become attached or receptive to a certain stimuli. It's totally different from like if I love my wife or if I love my dog or my children. They're not feeling that. So for the record, that's where I think anthropomorphization starts to become an issue when folks start to believe that their spider is showing some type of love or emotion towards them or their activities. And I just don't believe in that. And I think that's when you see situations like, you know, I joked a while ago where the woman that used to fall asleep with her spider sitting on her chest while she watched TV, and she was convinced the spider was watching TV. That's a scary level of anthropomorphization. That's the level of that behavior that's going to put the spider at risk. So those are the people that are taking their spiders out and putting them on their shoulders and walking around the house with them, not seeming to recognize that that spider isn't hanging on because it loves them. It's hanging on for dear life, that it could drop and fall. They could kill their beloved spider. These are the people that are taking them out and petting them and doing things with them that just aren't providing the spider with anything. It's a one-way street there. You are showing love. I love my spider. I'm petting him. I'm carrying it around. The spider isn't thinking, man, this woman's amazing or this guy's amazing. The spider is just surviving. So I think that's when you get into that unhealthy level where we're applying human characteristics to tarantulas. Now, are there spots where this type of behavior is healthy or not unhealthy? Yeah, I think there's a certain level we all do it to a point, or many of us do it, where it's not going to harm the animal. I'm not overly concerned with folks acting like their spiders are, you know, thinking or talking to them, as long as it doesn't impact their care. I remember, my whole Tom's Big Spiders thing is about appropriate care. If somebody's sitting there talking to their spiders and they think their spiders like hearing their voice, as long as you're not doing anything that's putting the spider in jeopardy, I don't care. I think we all do it to an extent. But I think where we run into problems is when we give them too much credit for thinking or for emotion. Now, thinking, that's something that's a little up in the air, because I think that we still have a lot to learn about quote-unquote spider or arachnid intelligence. I don't, now, before anybody thinks I'm going and saying, oh, these guys are super smart. No, I just think they're not as dumb and mechanical as we think they are. And that can be evidenced in some of these behaviors that we see from them that gives them quote unquote personalities. Because one of the components of these definitions is the fact that it's how they deal with life. What all of these things that come together, the emotions, the thinking, how does it determine how they go through life and adjust to life? It determines, and one of the things they talk about in this is the behavioral aspect of being a big part of personality, meaning part of your personality isn't just what you think and what you act like in your head or do in your head. It's how you behave as a result of it. So then it starts to make a little more sense when we look at spiders and go, hey, they have unique personalities because they do behave differently. They may not be emotional, but we have years of experience, keepers keeping these guys, to recognize that two keepers can have the same exact species, same exact setup, and get totally different behaviors out of them. And I've seen it, and I'm sure a lot of you have, those of you that pick up more than one sling and raise them up, there's a lot of differentiation in behavior between slings from the exact same sex. So for example, I was talking about earlier, a recent video I did where we rehoused four OBTs, P. murinus, and the four P. murinus, out of the four P. murinus, two of them were very heavy webbers. They webbed the snot out of their enclosures. Two of them did very little webbing at all. So that's a behavioral difference. For some reason, two of those ones took the same sim. Now, we're talking about spiders from the same sack, raised in the same place, put in the same enclosures with the same substrate, with the same setups, and they had different reactions to how they were going to adapt and react to their environment. That's those little quirks some would call personalities. Let's talk about behaviors. How many times have we heard, and this happens all the time. Obviously, I have a nice little view of this because every time I put up a video and I'm doing husbandry, I try to talk about the behaviors that I've observed with the particular species that I'm talking about. So say, let's take Brachypelma hemorrhoi. I have two Brachypelma hemorrhoi. I talk about the fact that they're fairly skittish, but not that bad overall, kind of laid back. I will have people that come up and say their Brachypelma hemorrhoi are the exact same size as mine, and they can put their hand out, they crawl gently in their hands. Mine would not do that. Mine would race all over my hands. Mine would kick some hairs. They're not that laid back. Then we have other folks that say, I open up my enclosure, my hemorrhoi is throwing up a threat posture. Those are differences in behavior. Now, in that situation, there are so many different variables that could differ between the people. Everything down to the temperature they're kept at, the humidity, the enclosures, the feeding schedules, There's so many things that could differ that you could see how one spider might react differently than the other. But how many times, for those of you out there who have raised, again, slings from the same sack, have you ended up with three totally different acting slings? You have one that buries itself, rarely comes out. You have another one that sits right on top, calm as can be. You have a third one that's kind of in between and very skittish and throws up threat postures. Those are three spiders, same DNA, kept the exact same way, that are acting differently. Those are what we're talking about when those of us who refer to personalities say that they have personalities, because we're recognizing that for all of our talk about them not being particularly intelligent, for all of our talk about them basically portraying them as almost mechanical in all of their behaviors, they don't all act exactly the same. If they were complete robots, if they were completely mechanical, if they were completely devoid of any type of ability to learn or react or act differently to stuff, then what we would have is you would raise 10, we'll stick with the P. murinus, 10 P. murinus the exact same way. You'd have 10 P. murinus that would act the exact same way. Same behavior, same, with each molt, nothing would change. But that's not what we have. We have spiders that vary wildly in behavior across the spectrum. That's where people are referring to them as having personalities. One may be laid back. One might be more defensive. I posted up a video. What was it? It was one of my fossorial species a while back. And I just got a comment today, like, is mine broke? It didn't burrow at all. You say here that they're supposed to burrow. Mine webbed up top. No, that's not wrong. I mean, could your substrate be dry or moist all the way through and your spider just doesn't feel inclined to burrow because it doesn't need to get to the moisture? I don't know. Maybe. Could there be differences? Yes. But the fact that some of them will burrow, some of them given the exact same environment, you'll get one that burrows, one that doesn't. That's a little difference in behavior. You get some that eat better than others. There's a lot of variations in how our tarantulas will behave, even under similar or even the exact same circumstances. And that's where folks start to come up with the idea that our spiders have personalities, that they have little differences in behavior, how they react to behavior and stimuli. I think with spiders, you obviously can't talk about their emotional patterns. You can't talk about their interests, their drives. Their drives are to eat, to grow, and reproduce. That's pretty much it. It's hardwired into them. They don't have self-concept. I don't think my spider's sitting there going, hey, I'm kind of acting like a jerk today. I should be nicer to Tom. It's not happening. But they do react to stimuli differently. And some of them develop patterns when reacting to stimuli. So that's what gives them their quote-unquote personality. So does it bother me when somebody says that their tarantula has a personality? No, because I've used it a million times myself and hope people understand. Of course, there's always going to be folks that read into it. And I think that's where people get upset, where they go, well, I had somebody once go, you referred to personality. Now people are going to go and think they like to be pet and they like to be talked to and they like to be. If anybody's getting that out of my videos, that's on them, not me. I think the vast majority of folks, even those that are just getting into the hobby, that are watching my videos, listening to my podcast, get where I'm coming from. You're always going to have the folks out there that have their own unique way of seeing things that are going to go, I don't care what anybody says. My spider recognizes when I call its name, it comes to me. I've had that before. I've had folks to say that their spiders like the sound of their voice. I've had folks to say that their spiders watch television, that they like sitting on them, they like crawling into their hand, that they like being pet, all of this stuff. I'm not saying that. What I'm saying is I don't think it's necessarily a terrible thing to refer to this differentiation in between spider behaviors as personalities. I think most of us get where we're coming from. I'm not going to back down from that. People can get upset about it. I get the other side of it to a point. Maybe it's better to say quirks, because that takes the word person out, takes the definition of personality out, which obviously puts a bunch of different values, concept, interests, all that stuff is out there. That doesn't work, whatever. But I think it's a harmless enough thing to say that your spider has personalities. Maybe we could, I would propose we say that they have animalities, but I'm pretty sure that's some type of fatality in Mortal Kombat, if I'm not mistaken. But it has a ring to it, animalities. Like, hey, you know what? We're saying they're not people. But as far as animals go, that we're still not sure how much they can and can't learn, how much they can and can't think, I don't think it would be unreasonable to go, oh, they have nice little animalities. They have different little ways of responding to the world around them. So that would be my long answer of it. I will continue to use it. I'm sure I will. Everyone, I don't get a lot of these. I want to make that very, very clear. It's not like people are coming to my videos all day. I don't think I use it a lot, but it's not like I've received tons of comments, angry comments of people that are on the other side that feel they're more mechanical and feel that any type of wording that could be seen as anthropomorphization would be detrimental to keeping. I like to think I don't do that enough to warrant a lot of those comments, but I do get them here and there. And the ones that I do get are the ones that tend to be really, 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 really against using those type of terms and words. I get it to an extent, but on the other hand, it's like, loosen up. There's worse things to worry about. I think most of us and a lot of folks that are deep in the hobby that get the fact, that get the limitations of their emotionality, that get the limitations of maybe their thinking ability, recognize that we're not saying they're people. We're not saying they think like people. We're just owning up the fact, we're identifying the fact that they can act differently from specimen to specimen. And I think this is an incredibly important thing to identify and to admit to, because think about it. How many times we get beginner species lists where somebody say, T. albopilosum, best beginner, mine is super cuddly. It crawls out my hand. It will be held. It's gentle. And then somebody else picks it up and goes, oh, the spider's going to be super gentle. And theirs is crazy. We need to be able to warn folks that personalities will differ between spider to spider. Behaviors will differ between spider to spider, even in the same species, even from the same sac. That's an important thing to identify. So I think, yeah, maybe people balk at the term person, but I think it's incredibly important for us to identify and make note of the fact that they all act differently, that you can have 20 different spiders from the same sac and all kept the same way, and they're all going to act differently. That's a very important thing to note. So that would be my take on it. I don't think I over anthropomorphize by any stretch of the imagination. I think obviously there's always going to be a little, at least with me, there's always going to be a little bit of it there, but I think anybody that's watched my videos and listened to me knows I take a very logical approach these animals. And I think logically speaking, allowing people to mention the fact that there's going to be differences in the way they perceive the world around them or react to the world around them is a very important thing to recognize. And sometimes quirks just doesn't sound as good. I think personality just kind of tells you it's the overall package of the spider. We can all have a little quirks. Personality is their overall, how does this spider react to the world around? That's just my two cents on it. I get why people get upset about it. It's just not something that tends to bother me too much. I'm assuming though, however, that if people are seeing an issue with this, if it's becoming an issue, if your people are there coming on going, oh, my little foofy-woofy loves seeing me, I'm assuming it's on like the Facebook groups and social media, because that's where I avoid these things, because it irritates me sometimes. But I do know that when I used to be on the Facebook groups, it'd be a lot of folks that would express these types of beliefs, that their spider was actually loved them and enjoyed them. I'm guessing it's coming from there. So that would be my take on it. Do they have quote unquote, I think if you use personalities in quotes, it makes sense. Quote unquote, do they have a little personality? Yes, our spiders do act differently. They do behave differently. They do react to stimuli around them differently. And I think that's important to note so that you can prep for the fact that your spider, although your buddy has a spider that's super laid back, yours may not be so laid back. Although you've read from a bunch of folks that the spider is supposed to be a heavy webber, yours is only webbed a little bit, but it's eating fine, it's growing great. It's good to recognize that there is differentiation in behaviors between species. So I guess that would be the way to do it, different behaviors, I don't know. But the idea somebody just uses personality for it really doesn't bother me all that much at all. But feel free to chime in if this is an issue on the board, if this is something people are seeing. Again, I'm not privy to it. I'd love to hear about it. Please feel free to leave a comment. Now for our next question, this one came up, and I want to make sure I handle this in a way, because I'm going to admit this whole idea is one of my pet peeves. I'm calling myself out for it. It kind of annoys me when it comes up. I do think that a lot of it springs from people thinking about other animals that need this kind of stuff, from seeing things posted in social media with folks doting over their animals in a way that they treat them like they're little furry animals that need this type of stuff. But anyway, this is from Courtney J. I'm not going to say the last name because I did not. This was a comment on a YouTube video, and I was about to answer it. And I'm like, you know what? I've received a couple comments in the past few months about this kind of stuff, so it'll be a good topic to answer here. And what I'll do is just give her a link to it, and hopefully we'll get a new podcast subscriber, and she can read about some of this stuff or hear about some of this stuff that she's probably going to encounter as she moves her way through the hobby. So anyway, from Courtney. Hey, Tom, I'm still a newbie, so I was wondering if you could give me some advice on enrichment. I just don't know what that may be. I just don't want my babies to get bored. If you have time to write me back, I would sure appreciate it much. Thanks so much. Well, Courtney, I'm not going to write you back, but hopefully you'll get this link and you'll be able to hear this. Here's the deal. Enrichment. When I think of enrichment, I think of the folks that put the ping pong balls in. And I have to admit, I feel bad. If anybody's out there doing this, I'm not, do what you do. I can't stand the ping pong ball thing, because I can't tell you how many folks will come onto my videos and go, your spider looks bored. You should give it a ping pong ball so that it can play. This goes back to what we were talking about earlier with anthropomorphization of tarantulas and spiders, thinking that they're getting bored, thinking that tarantulas in the wild are doing anything other than maybe wandering around at night looking for prey, or sitting at the mouth of their burrow waiting for prey to come by, or going inside their burrow when it's too hot, or going inside the burrow when it's too cold, thinking that they suddenly sit there and they're like, hey, Harvey, I'm bored. You guys want to go find a rock or something to roll it around? That's not how these animals operate. That is not when you get a, when people send, somebody sent me a video and they're like, look at this example. My spider is obviously enjoying playing with it. Now, can anybody that's raised tarantulas guess what this spider did with the ping pong ball? They put the ping pong ball in. A pop quiz. Where did the ping pong ball end up? How many of you out there said in the water dish? You are exactly correct. The video was, he was saying, look, it's playing like basketball. It's taking the ping pong ball and it's moving it and putting it in its water dish like a game. No, it's putting in its water dish because one of the things we've realized, and this is something everybody complains about when we talk about tarantulas and water dishes, is the fact that tarantulas often use their water dishes as garbage pails. The thought process is that in the wild, if there's a pond or there's a stream or there's running water or there's some, this is where they know that if they put their garbage there, their remains, their boluses from prey, their molts, whatever they want out of the way, and they put it in this area, it'll eventually get washed away. That's a thought process. Is there proof to that? I don't know if there's been an actual study on it, but I think it makes a lot of sense because we've all seen it. Some of them just fill up the thing. Maybe it's because in the wild, if there's standing water, there's a point where this water could overflow and fill their burrows. So their mind is they're going to go, they're going to build up around it and block it off. Who knows? But I can tell you right now, that tarantula didn't go, oh, look it, here's this big white round foreign object, I'm going to bat it around my enclosure because I need some exercise and play. That's not how they're built. As much as I may be willing to concede that there may be more thought going on there, more maybe quote-unquote stimulus and response, maybe learned behavior, I will never, you're going to need some really amazing experimentation and data to prove to me that the spider is actually enjoying playing with the ping pong ball. What you're getting is they're identifying a foreign object that doesn't fit. I'm sure they're looking at like, what in God's name is this thing? Why is it here? And they're trying to get it out of the way. When they push it, the ball continues to roll. So the spider continues to push it around the enclosure as it tries to get it out of the way. It's not playing with it. It's moving it around. If anybody, you know, anybody that's kept spiders has watched, they'll dig burrows and then suddenly they'll decide to redo their burrows. This is probably because in the wild, if they have a burrow and they decide the burrow is not suitable or they want a different burrow, they will wander out. They will find another spot. They will dig another burrow or find another found burrow that they can adapt to as their own home. But in their own enclosure, they have to just kind of work with what they have. So they go, all right, you know, whatever's going on in the little tarantula mind, it decides it doesn't feel secure in its burrow or it's feeling exposed or it's whatever it may be. So they do some renovating. That's what's going on. And I like to point out to people that the majority of species, yes, some of them will do some travel overnight. Some of them will travel to do, like we said, they'll decide they need a new burrow. They'll go traveling around, leave out a guide web, go out, find another spot they might like better and adapt that one. But they're not active hunters. They're not like, say, a wolf spider. Wolf spider is going to constantly, it has to constantly eat because it's constantly out hunting, burning energy. It has a faster metabolism. Tarantulas are masters. They're experts at not wasting energy, at conserving energy. They wait, they sit and wait. They come out at night, they crawl around a little bit, they sit at the mouths of the burrow, they wait for food to come by, but they're not sitting there going, hey, I need to go out and jog, I need to get some energy out. No, they're conserving that energy, they need that energy. So the idea that the tarantula needs cognitive stimulation is, it just sounds ridiculous to me. And the thing that drives me nuts again is the folks will see what they want to see. It's an anthropomorphization of it. They see their spider with the ping pong ball. They see their spider with the SpongeBob house they put in. It seems to love the SpongeBob. I had somebody show me my tarantula hated all the other dens it had. And then I gave it the SpongeBob pineapple and look at it. She loves it. It's they're not thinking of it that way. And if you're giving them something to do as far as to stimulate them mentally, that's just silly because they don't need mental stimulation. They're sitting there waiting for something to come by so they can eat it. I have a G poker beast who has been sat in the same position now for over a week. She doesn't move. I will feed her later. She will move then. She'll go, oh, there's prey. She'll grab the prey. She'll move around, do a little tarantula happy dance, stand up on her tippy toes and eat. And that's about it. The queen, I once had a series of photos of the queen over the course of, I believe, it was a month where I took pictures of her sat in the exact same spot. She didn't move at all in a month. That's a spider that was probably close to 40 when she died. She was in great shape. She didn't need mental stimulation. She wasn't sitting there bored. She didn't need TV. She didn't need a ping pong ball. She didn't need a hamster wheel. They don't need that kind of stuff. That's us taking behaviors from other animals and applying them to animals that don't necessarily need or benefit from them. It could be a detriment. And let's talk about why it's a detriment. How many of us have had mature males? What happens with mature males? Mature males, they mature out. Some of them won't eat. So let's take the ones out that don't eat a lot afterward. They eat here and there or they don't eat very well. Let's look at the ones that continue eating. They will continue to eat. I feed my mature, some of my mature males, I end up feeding twice a week, big meals, and they still get super skinny. Why is that? Well, because they're roaming around their enclosures. They're moving constantly. They're burning, I think they burn calories, but they're burning energy trying to move around to find a female. They don't stop moving. That's what happens when you take a spider and you have it move that much. They're not able, the metabolism isn't able to keep up with it. So they get very, very thin. I've had a very, now obviously, this is different from if you talk about the slow growing species, if we're talking about the gab species, Gramostola fontipelma, Brachypelma, those males can eat and live a long time. But the faster growing species of males, the ones that, you know, they reach maturity in a couple of years, they burn out quickly because they're burned. They're just constantly on the move. When you see pictures of mature males in the wild, even mature fontipelma species, what do they look like? They're super skinny in the abdomen because I'm sure they're probably stopping to eat at some point. They're just not taking in enough calories, enough nutrients to keep it going, to keep that weight on. So that's an example of what happens when spiders are super active. Now, why would you trigger your spider to be super active? Why would you put things in its enclosure like a ping pong ball so that it's constantly moving? I mean, again, I guess the other end of the side of the argument is they will naturally shift around their environment. They will bulldoze, they will dig, they will move things around. This is just adding to it, but that's something they do on their own without us adding a foreign object in. Again, the spider isn't looking at this white sphere going, hey, I want to play with that. This is fun. Let's throw the ball around. They're moving it around because they're adapting to it. Like we talked about earlier, the behaviors, the personalities. The spider is saying, I don't know what this thing is. Usually it's, I want it out of here. If the spider's walking around the enclosure with it and looks like it's playing with it, I can almost assure you it's not. And all I'm seeing in that situation is a spider that's burning unnecessary energy where it doesn't need to. It needs to spend time burning energy doing the things it needs to do, like webbing, creating its burrow, moving its burrow, eating, hunting, not moving something around an enclosure. So the question, Courtney, and again, I get it because you see stuff out there and it looks cool. I remember years ago when I first started really getting into the hobby, I found a video where somebody put a ping pong ball in and they're like, look at my tarantula's playing with a ping pong ball. And it was cool to watch it. It was neat because it kind of, again, that anthropomorphization kind of humanized it for a minute. We could all, as humans, appreciate a person playing with a ball, a child playing with a ball. Look at how many of our professional sports involve balls. It kind of humanizes them. It makes them less scary. Hey, this is a spider that appears to be playing with a ball like a person does. That's cute, right? That makes them more relatable. And so I get that. But then rapidly, I did more research and realized this is nothing but the spider moving this thing around its enclosure because it's trying to get it the heck out of the way. So do they need enrichment as far as activities to do? Do spiders get bored? No, you're never going to convince me of that. I would need to see some ridiculously compelling data to convince me that we were able to adequately measure a spider's boredom and measure the fact that this is detrimental to the spider's health. That a spider just sitting there in standby mode waiting for prey to come by, and And let us not forget about the quote-unquote standby mode. Everybody's seen this where there's spiders in there. It's standing, but you drop something in, and for a second, the spider doesn't react at all because it seems to be on, like, standby mode. It seems to be turned off, and all of a sudden, it springs to life, and sometimes you get a threat posture because, like, whoa, what's going on here? That's them conserving energy. They're not thinking about anything. They're not having an ADD moment where they're dreaming about something they're going to do later on. This is an animal that is just, there's not a lot going on there. So the idea that they need stimulation, that they need some type of activity or, you know, a playground or obstacles or a jungle gym or something to keep them busy is just, I don't know, just nonsense to me. I've seen some of the stuff, been privy to some of the stuff that's on Facebook groups and, you know, things that people post. We talked about recently the whole thing with the velvet spiders and the jumping spiders and how people are creating these amazing environments for them. And that's a spider that I would see. You know what? That's one I would go, I'm interested. They do seem to be more bright than normal spiders. There is data out there. There's research it shows. I believe it was like the thought, I want to say the cognitive ability or problem solving ability of a 2-year-old or something like that, that they've recognized they watch you, they follow you. They've trained them to go jump from finger to finger. That's a different story. But again, like that podcast, we addressed that type of behavior. I think people take that and they immediately go, this will work for tarantulas too. And I'm sorry, I just don't think it applies. Now, as far as enrichment, if you're talking about giving them a more stimulating and more naturalistic environment so that you could draw out some more of those natural behaviors, that's a different thing. So, Courtney, if you're talking about enrichment as far as making an enclosure more inviting, more natural, you know, giving it more cover through plants, either real or fake, by giving it multiple hides, by giving it some structures in there, like lately I've been doing more with stacking up cork bark and putting little cork bark pieces in, putting, you know, seed pods, things of that nature, that I think has some merit, only because you're trying to replicate its natural environment. You're giving the spider choices of, if you're dealing with an old world or a fossorial species, you're giving it choices of whether or not to burrow or web up top. So for example, for my OBTs, I used to just put a cork bark hide in. I put the spider in there and the spider would do some burrowing and webbing around it. That was it. And now with my newer enclosures, I'm using grapevines. I'm creating structures around it so that the spider can hide behind those multiple hides. They can use those structures to web to. That's a different story. So I want to clarify and make very clear. Putting toys in, putting SpongeBob pineapples in, putting these little decorations, jack-o'-lanterns for Halloween, little witches, action figures, because they find it. No, I think that's just the person exercising some of their creativity, drawing in some of the things they like and adding them to the spider's enclosure because it makes them happy. That does nothing for the spider in most cases, or the tarantula in most cases, except make a very busy enclosure. And in the best case scenario, it's a busy enclosure. The spider can web stuff too and just destroy it and do what it needs to do. Worst case scenarios, you create a death trap. I told you how I've seen people build Lego structures. Any parent that's ever stepped on a Lego knows how dangerous those things can be, how sharp the corners are. And I've seen people build Lego structures. They put things in from aquariums in that have sharp corners. So if the spider falls on them, it can possibly hurt itself, puncture its abdomen, and die. That's negligent keeping as far as I'm concerned. However, giving it multiple hides, putting in structures that allow the spider to be able to have something to web to hide behind. There's been, and this is something where I've changed my keeping for some of my species over the years. I used to keep them in very Spartan enclosures without a lot in there. And as I've spent more time in the hobby, I find it rewarding for me to spend a little more time on the enclosures, to start using the leaf litter, to start putting in multiple hides, to put in things to web to put in plants, either real or fake, to give them more an environment that we've seen, talking about behaviors, we've seen that spiders, some species of spiders, especially fossorial ones or the more shy ones, if given some of those plants, they're more inclined to come out and be out in the open. They have something they feel like they can use as cover and they'll be more visible. I don't see anything wrong with that. So if we're talking about as far as enrichment, creating a more appropriate enriched environment, meaning extra cover, plants, hides, things that are appropriate for the spider to eventually settle down and build whatever type of den it needs, absolutely 100% for it. When we use the word, I don't like when we hear the phrase, I just don't want my babies to get bored, right there we're anthropomorphizing. They're not getting bored. I consider myself very open-minded. I've changed my keeping. Next week's topic, we're going to talk about how I've changed my ideas about a certain topic. We'll get to that later. But That's something you're going to be hard pressed to convince me of otherwise. It can't be, hey, look at little Johnny. He was hiding in his burrow and I put in this, bikini bottom diorama. I put in a bunch of bikini bottom houses and look at my spiders out all the time now. It's not doing it for what you think. It may just find that it can hide behind these structures. And it's making it feel more comfortable. It's not going out there going, wow, you know what? This guy, this girl, gal, whoever it may be, really loves me because they took the time to give me something that was a little bit more visually stimulating that I can play with. That's not what's happening. I'm sorry. That's going to be a really difficult sell for me. So Courtney, do not worry about, take that bored word and get it right out of your mind. Don't worry about your spiders being bored. Worry about your spiders being set up correctly. Do your research. If it's fossorial, give it room to dig, but give it some room up top, especially if it's an old world species, and give it some stuff to web to. Give it multiple hides. Give it cover. Give it a water dish. Give it some leaf litter. Give it some moss. Give it things that allow it to feel like it's got a little naturalistic environment there. By all means, that's fantastic. But if you're thinking about your spider being bored and thinking about that it might need a ping pong ball or a swing set or a hamster wheel, you're not seeing these animals correctly. That's what we're talking about in the beginning of this podcast, where we talk about anthropomorphization and when it can be a detriment to the hobby. I would consider that to be one of those situations. I mean, the ping pong ball, people will argue, well, it really doesn't hurt them. Yeah, okay, you're right. It really doesn't hurt them. But they're just burning off energy for no reason whatsoever. Let's concentrate on the things. That's all what Tom's Big Spiders is about. That's all, the only reason I do this is to kind of break the care down to people in a logical manner and have them set up their spiders in a way that benefits the spider. When you're decorating it with a bunch of toys and things like that, that's for the keeper. That's not for the spider. It should always be spider-centered. It should be the animal first. Sure, you may love SpongeBob, you may love Scooby-Doo, you found this awesome little mystery machine van you can stick in there, and the grand scheme of things, is that going to help your spider? In most cases, the answer is going to be no. So, Courtney, again, great question. I hope that this reaches you well. You hear it. If not, I'm going to put, obviously, a comment with a link to this, and hopefully you'll be able to hear it, because I believe I can articulate it better than sometimes when you write something out in text format, it loses some of the fact that, hey, I'm not yelling at you, I'm not mad, I'm not upset. It comes across rather gruff. I don't want that at all. I want you to be able to hear in my voice. Believe me, I get it. We've all been there. We've all seen this stuff. And certain people explain it in a way where, I mean, I think that's one of the things with social media and YouTube. You trust the person, they do it. They say, look, I did this, my spider did this, therefore, this is what's going on. And that's not scientific at all. That's not how science works. So I get it. I get why it seems compelling, but we have to be careful with this kind of stuff, because again, kind of the whole point of this podcast, the theme of it is, you know, how much anthropomorphization is too much, how much can be dangerous. And in this sense, I think when you're starting to think your tarantula is bored, that could become a dangerous type environment. That could become a dangerous type situation. So that will do it for this one. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it. Again, I always look for feedback. A lot of folks have been going over to Spotify and leaving feedback, and that's fantastic. And I'd love to hear, again, I think we've all seen stuff in our collections that makes us stop and think, hey, is there more going on here than we suspect? And I'm never so close-minded to think that in a million years, we're not going to somewhere down the line maybe prove that there's a little more going on in their little spider brains than we give them credit for. It's just, I'm only willing to stretch that so much. And I think, again, sometimes we take it too far, and that's when it becomes an issue. So I'd love to hear your situation with it. If you're somebody that uses the ping pong ball, I hope it doesn't come across like, I get it. I do. It drives me nuts, because I get so many folks that come on there. I had recently somebody go on one of my videos, and I forget, I should have taken notes. It just kind of irritated me, so I kind of bebopped off of it. There was a spider sitting there, and they're like, you really need to provide your spider with more stimulation. Look how sad and bored it looks. Quote unquote, sad and bored. And it was just like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. So that's why it tends to get on my nerves. It's when you hear that kind of stuff, it can be a bit irritating, only because you recognize the ignorance behind it. And I'm not using ignorance as a derogatory term. Ignorance means you don't know any better. You haven't done the research. You don't recognize that what you're saying really isn't logical. It's not necessarily you're a bad person or an evil person or trying to do something. You think you're helping out, but you just don't know any better. So yeah, stuff can be kind of annoying, which is why I tend to get the ping pong balls. You drive me nuts. But hey, if you've done it, you know, feel free to chime in. I'm always willing to listen to the other side. So if somebody out there is listening to this and going, wait a minute, this is what I observe, I'm down to here. So that will do it for this one. As I mentioned already, I think I just realized I didn't do one last week. I went up here, I went to do one, it was Christmas Eve, and I just didn't feel like doing it. So I apologize for people that maybe were looking forward to it, but I took some Tom time. I took some family time. We relaxed and got ready for the holiday. Billy and I always exchange gifts on Christmas Eve, so I had to do some wrapping. It was an awesome day and I really don't regret it. But if you haven't been over to YouTube, I believe last week I posted my, I rehoused four P. Murinus, the orange color for him, the OBTs. And I could not wait. I've been waiting to do this one because I've seen so much OBT stuff out there. So much, for lack of a better term, crap where people are like talking about how vicious they are. It drives me nuts with this species. And I told Billy, I'm like, I can't wait to do this to show people that it's not a fluke. I'm going to do four of them. It's going to go super smoothly. And people are going to start having to recognize that they're, if you keep them correctly, you don't necessarily have to, again, they all have their own unique, I'm doing air quotes, personalities. They all have their unique quirks. So you might have one that just is vicious. I get it. But I've had now eight of them. I've raised up eight of them, nine if you count the species tet that I have. And I've had zero issues with them whatsoever. So I wanted to kind of put something out there that the next time somebody's like, oh, I hate when people come on, and I know they're just trying to be like, part of the hobby and be in with it and like, oh, there's those orange demons. I'm surprised you didn't bite your face off. I know they're trying to be nice and it's stuff that they've read, but it drives me nuts because I don't see that with these guys. And I think, unfortunately, we've turned a lot of folks off of keeping what I consider to be one of the hobby staple old world tarantulas. So feel free to check that one out. And then the last one, we got some kind of pre-holiday. We got a pre-holiday package from Fear Not Tarantulas, picked up some cool stuff. Also got a new centipede, the Scolopendra galapagosensis. I was trying to pronounce it in Latin in the video, and I've had so many people go, the OE in Latin is oi, so I think I said galapagosensis, which would be the Latin way to pronounce it. I am so sick of getting criticized on the Latin. There's different ways to pronounce it. There's different, and they get people that like really get offended that took Latin. It'll come on and like, yeah, you may know a lot about spiders, but you don't know a lot about Latin. It's like, for crying out loud, I don't know a lot about Latin. Or you get ones that say that and then somebody comes on and then says, that's not how you say it in Latin. This is how you say it in Latin. So anyway, I love scientific names. I do not like pronouncing scientific names, but anyway, I put that up. I'm going to be raising one up. And the coolest thing was that I put the video up and the individual, I'm not sure if the gender of the person, but the individual that raised these and produced these actually chimed in and watches my channel, which I thought was the coolest freaking thing. Billy and I were walking yesterday. I'm like, did you see that comment? She's like, I did. That person actually raised it. Like, I had done so much research on centipedes in general, because I plan on getting more, and on the galapagosensis, because they've changed how we keep them now. There's differences in how, back in the day, it's just like you put them in a jar with a lot of moist substrate, and now we're realizing that they can actually suffer from mycosis, which is when it's too moist and they start to rot because of the moisture, that they can suffer from that, which is obviously different from back in the day. You just you throw them in something moist, you keep it moist all the time. So now they're talking about keeping centipedes with part of it moist, part of it dry. Just a whole, it was so fascinating for me to go in and try to figure out what are the current theories about keeping these guys. So I set them up in one where it was half dry, half moist, put a bunch of hides in there. And again, the person who actually produced them chimed in and said, that's exactly how I'm keeping them. I keep half moist, half dry, let the top layer dry out in between, make it rain, overflow the water dish, all the stuff I was doing. So it was so great to hear from this person. So excited about that. And like I said, I have my eye on a few more centipedes. So we'll get in that. Obviously, it's Tom's Big Spiders. And I've said before that that will always be my focus, is spiders, tarantulas, megalomorphs and the like. However, I do like the peds. Billy hates them. I do like the peds, though, and I would like to have more, especially the giant ones. I find them to be amazing, and I would like to produce some good content with them as far as how to keep them. So we're going to mix things up a little bit in the future, but if you want to check that video out, feel free. I'm done. Starting to lose my voice is most talking I've done pretty much the whole week, all vacation. I'm going to go downstairs, play some video games. So that will do it for this one. As always, you can find me on thomasbigspiders@podcast.com. You can leave a comment on Spotify. You can find me on Thomas Big Spiders YouTube. Guys, I hope you all had a fantastic holiday. Happy New Year. It's New Year's Eve. This will be up for New Year's Eve. Please, if you're out drinking, be responsible about it. You know, don't go out drinking and driving. I hate that crap. And have just a very enjoyable new year. And here's to 2024. We're going to be moving into in February. I believe we'll be on season 7 of this. I can't believe I've been doing it for that long. And I got some cool ideas moving ahead. Guys, happy new year. Stay safe. We'll see you all next time.